We're back on the road with our fourth live taping episode. We got out of the big cities and are finding our roots because there is more to South Carolina than just those big three cities, guys. For this episode, we taped in front of a crowd of dedicated whip crackhead leaders at T.W. Boone's in Greenwood last Thursday.
Brown liquor.
If you missed it, don't worry, because guess what? We're planning more tapings across the state. So drop us a line on social media on where you think we should go next for our taping. Now, without further ado, here's our episode. Welcome to the South Carolina Lead, a podcast that breaks down the state political news for you and provides insight on legislative happenings under the Statehouse Dome in Columbia. Hello, I'm your host, Gavin Jackson, and this episode is for the week of February 26, 2019. And we are in Greenwood. Say hello to this crowd at T.W. Boone's! That's right, we got a nice crowd here in Greenwood, and we are here talking about the Democratic presidential primary, because we are about a year away, if you can believe it. It's a big deal because South Carolina is not just the first in the South, but with its diverse electorate, candidates find out just how well their message will play to a broader audience. It will also shape the field days before Super Tuesday. So we look at the Democrats already visiting the state and talk with the journalists who are covering them. The Lead is a podcast where we go behind the headlines with the reporters who wrote the stories affecting you. Every Tuesday, we give you a roundup of news, insight into the week's biggest stories, campaign trail intrigue, and a chaser of trivia. Now, you can listen to all four sections of our podcast instead of wondering about Indiana Jones's problematic relationship with Marion in Raiders of the Lost Ark.
Let's not go there.
We watched it the other
day. We don't talk about that.
Or while you try to memorize all the Democrats running for president. Has anyone done that yet? Let's see. There's a lot. And now for our quorum call. Quorum call is a term to see if there's a majority present, but here on the South Carolina Lead, we know a majority of the time that you're not always current with the news. So here's a quick recap of several top stories you should know about. Number one, education update. The state newspaper reports that House Ways and Means Committee, which writes the House version of the budget, added roughly $159 million into the state's budget to help raise starting teacher pay to $35,000 from $32,000. And give teachers pay raises. The current plan is to give teachers with less than 5 years of experience a 6 to 10% pay raise, and teachers with 5 to 20 years in the classroom would get about 4% on average. Now, the House will debate this in early March, and tweaks are also happening on the major education bill that House Speaker Jay Lucas expects will be debated before the budget in March. Number two, we have a MOX update for you if you listened to last week's podcast. Our friend Colin Demarest at the Aiken Standard reports that the federal government is suing the mixed oxide fuel fabrication facility's lead contractor, Mox Services, as well as the project subcontractor, Wise Services, accusing both of fraudulent and otherwise illicit financial acts. Now, the suit alleges about $6.4 million worth of dishonest claims spurred by Wise Services were submitted for repayment by Mox Services. The suit alleges that Wise provided cash, gift cards, Yeti coolers, sporting events tickets, and a lot of other kickbacks to Mox Services to gain favorable treatment. So be sure to keep up with that. Number three, the Post and Courier reports that a Southern Poverty Law Center report found that the number of hate groups in South Carolina increased for the third consecutive year in 2018. A lot of hate for hate groups. The number of groups increased to 17 from 14. Nationwide, the number of hate groups also rose to 1,020, its highest in two decades. Now, Charleston City Council in November became the first municipality in the state, to pass a hate crime ordinance. Legislation at the state level, however, remains stalled. And number four, another Post and Courier story. The state's tourism economic impact to South Carolina is $22.6 billion, billion with a B. Billion. 2018 marked the sixth consecutive year of record-breaking growth. This represents $1.4 billion more than 2017. Now, the impact is especially impressive considering Hurricane Florence caused about $117 million worth of damage to the state last year. And just like this gem of a town, Greenwood, we buried the lead. All right, leaders. Well, we are just about a year away from the Democratic presidential primary. A lot, and I mean a lot, is going to happen between now and then. In fact, a lot is already happening in the state, if you haven't noticed. That's why we got the gang back together to give you a little update on the 2020 Democratic presidential field. Now, the candidates that have already declared as of February 21st are Senators Cory Booker, Kamala Harris.
No.
Kamala Harris. God, it's a hard one for me. I don't want to talk about it.
Kirsten. 2 minutes ago.
I'm telling you. Kirsten Gillibrand, Elizabeth Warren, Amy Klobuchar, and Bernie Sanders, the independent from Vermont. Others include Representative Tulsi Gabbard, former housing Secretary of Housing, Urban Development Secretary Julian Castro, former Maryland Representative John Delaney, South Bend, Indiana Mayor Pete Buttigieg.
Nope. But Buttigieg.
Buttigieg. We got to make a guide. Jamie can do our guide for us. Entrepreneur Andrew Yang and spiritual author Marianne Williamson. So there's also a former Republican Massachusetts governor, Bill Weld, has declared he will run against President Trump. And there's some other Republicans that are expected possibly to jump in this race too. So if you didn't get all that, or if you did get all that, we're going to have a quiz later. And I want to see the pencils come out. We're going to have some bubble sheets out there in a minute. So.
Stabilize,
I know my professors know what I'm talking about. So joining me to talk about all this and how this is shaping up is Jamie Lovegrove with the Post and Courier and Mayan Schechter with the State Newspaper. Great to have you both back here and here in Greenwood.
Thank you for having
me.
I'm very excited to be here.
I got a message the other day on Twitter from a big Jamie Lovegrove fan. I was like, hey,
He's a busy guy. That was my other account.
We also got a nice fan letter from someone in Russia, which apparently was a scam, but we were excited anyway.
That was also me.
Just a reminder that we are merging this discussion with the campaign trail. Oh, that was a good curveball. I'm glad you got that. So we're going to kind of really get into this. And also, we just released a new mini pod that dropped. But every now and then when these candidates are coming through, we're going to kind of compile some sound bites from them we get from the field, and then also some interviews with South Carolinians to hear what they think about all the candidates coming through. We're going to try and drop those on Thursdays of the following week whenever they come through, because they come on weekends and stuff like that. So keep track of that. Subscribe to us, and it'll pop up usually on Thursdays. So. And you can see all their full remarks from all these campaign events on SCETV's YouTube page, uninterrupted, just their full remarks as they talk. So we're trying to help you guys stay educated and informed for 2020. So without further ado, Jamie, let's get into the importance of South Carolina. Maybe people are wondering why all these people are coming to South Carolina. We're hip to the step. We know what's going on. But, you know, this primary, like we said, is coming after Iowa and New Hampshire. It's days before Super Tuesday, and there's 9 states in that big Super Tuesday primary. Some of them are in the South, too. So what is South Carolina going to be providing these candidates come next February? What is the importance of the state when it comes to all those other factors?
What it gives you is real wind at your back as you head into Super Tuesday, which is such a decisive day for this primary. You know, you come here, it's the first in the South primary. It is the first primary that has a significant African-American voting bloc, which is, you know, really the base of the Democratic Party nationally and particularly in the South. So 61% was in 2016. You know, I was talking to Trav Robertson, the South Carolina Democratic Party chairman, just the other day, and he thought that it probably won't be quite that high this time around. But it is still the first real test with a diverse electorate. Iowa is very white. New Hampshire is very white. Mm-hmm. And South Carolina is a little more of a bellwether, a little more reflective of the rest of the country. So if you can do well here, that has historically been indicative that you will do well elsewhere throughout the South. South Carolina has chosen every eventual Democratic primary winner in the last few decades, with the exception of John Edwards in 2004 over John Kerry. So it is big, and it's going to get a lot of attention over the next 12 months.
And Mayan, where are you kind of seeing this diverse field coming and visiting South Carolina? At this point, it's just networking. It seems like they're also having rallies. But we were talking a minute ago about campaign staffs and the importance of forming that network. What have we been seeing so far, and who's maybe kind of taking the lead when it comes to staffing up and making those important connections?
I think we've seen Kamala Harris and Cory Booker, and we were just talking about this, staff up pretty quickly and early. I would say weeks after that they announced their candidacy for president. So both of those two campaigns now have staffing in South Carolina, which already gives them a really good network to work with. Those staffers, Clay Middleton, Cory Booker, Jaleesa Washington Price for Kamala Harris, know people on the ground, know the groups on the ground, and that's very important for both of these candidates. And that's something that, given that both of these candidates have been able to hire so fast, other campaigns are going to have to figure out. There's not that many Democratic operatives and not that
at
many
experienced.
No, in South Carolina. That's a problem that the party has here. And so the very fact that both of these two campaigns have been able to kind of soak up really key Democrats very quickly. I don't know if you would say that should worry other campaigns that are coming through, but that's definitely an advantage that they'll have going forward.
And Jamie, we're already kind of seeing that play out and how they're strategizing and going about campaigning. Like, you know, we saw Cory Booker came to town on his first big swing through her after he declared, and he went to Fairfield, he went to Denmark, he went to Sumter. Yep. He didn't go to Charleston, he didn't go to Columbia, he didn't go to Greenville. Is that indicative of maybe what they're trying to do here when it comes to their strategy?
Well, you know, Clay Middleton, who, as Mayan said, has been hired as a senior advisor for Booker's campaign here, Crystal Spain will actually be his state director. She was, I mean, what's notable but just about his staffing real quick is that Crystal was a senior staffer for Bernie Sanders in 2016 in South Carolina. Clay was a senior staffer for Hillary Clinton in 2016 in South Carolina, so they kind of have both ends of the spectrum there. And he did come to Columbia for King Day at the Dome, so he has already come here. But Clay did say when he announced that schedule, when Booker announced that schedule, going to more rural areas, you know, that this is exactly what they want to be doing. They want it to be a 46-county campaign. They want to be going to every corner of the state. They want to make sure that Democrats all over South Carolina feel like he is listening to them. And that's something that you can only do if you're willing to commit a significant amount of time and energy here and you're willing to venture out. So it was interesting to see him do that.
Yeah, I did see him down in Voorhees College, and he was already hoarse and, you know, speaking. And like, I'm like, oh my gosh, he's only been doing two events so far. But I will tell you why is because he was answering every question. Like, it was not scripted. It was people were asking him questions about, you know, small issues like local issues.
Yeah.
That presidents don't typically deal with, but his experience as a mayor in Newark, I think, gave him the ability to field those and then maybe put them in a bigger context. And so it's interesting to see how he works a crowd and brings his experiences to the table versus, you know, some others and what their backgrounds are. And Mayan, you covered Senator Harris when she was in Columbia as well. And she was doing a little bit of retail politicking, literally. I mean, she was out in the stores and shops. I mean, we're seeing rallies, we're seeing people in churches. What's it like out there right now with the rallies and, you know, in their versions of campaigning right now, and what seems to be sticking with people? I mean, what's the vibe on the ground there?
So I've mostly been covering Senator Harris's campaign and have noticed that she's really made a concerted effort to meet even one person. I mean, that was the most interesting thing I thought about her hours-long tour on Lady Street in downtown Columbia, where she stopped at, not necessarily boutiques, but three different shops that were all female-owned, but also every owner is African-American. She's made a really concerted effort to reach out to these women, even if they're not huge groups. And I know, I'm sure Cory Booker's campaign has done the same and others will do as well. But it's been really interesting to watching that aspect. Then when she held her bigger rally in Columbia later that day at Brooklyn Baptist Church, and she was able to garner a kind of an audience that was incredibly diverse, whether by race, whether by age, gender. And it was very interesting to watch that she's not just appealing, these other candidates too, they're not just appealing to the demographic that we assume they will, but they're really bringing in, I think, even maybe a younger crowd.
Yeah, that's all. When I was in North Charleston when she was speaking, I mean, they had about 1,000 people out there. I don't know what the crowd size was in Columbia.
About 1,000, yeah.
I mean, that's huge turnout, and I mean, is that indicative of just people maybe interested? Because people I talk with, they're just really interested to hear these candidates. It's so early, there's so many people.
I think this is a really important point. You know, sometimes when we go to these rallies, we'll say there were 1,000 Kamala Harris supporters at this rally, and generally that's not really the case, at least at this stage in the primary. Yeah. Most of these are just, when we talk to them, you know, we'll go out and we'll mill out the crowd and ask folks why they're there. They're just checking everybody out. We're at the stage in the race where we don't even know what the entire field's going to be. We still got Beto O'Rourke, Joe Biden deciding whether or not they want to run. And so they're checking everybody out. They're giving everybody a listen. And I think what it's really reflective of is that the Democratic base, the Democratic electorate, is raring to get started on this. If it was up to them, this election would be tomorrow, I think. They want it to get going. We'll see if that kind of energy can sustain for 12 months. The primary date is February 29th, which, by the way, we were discussing this the other day. Yeah. I don't know when we're going to be able to say we're a year out because February 28th, March 1st, we're going to be, I guess, at midnight on February 28th, we'll say we're a year out.
Send out the tweet. Yeah.
Leap year. So there is a lot of excitement out
there.
Look it up. Now that people are getting it, there you go. There's a lot of excitement just to get going, not necessarily behind an individual.
But I also think a lot of voters are very overwhelmed. I mean, this is the first time in a really long time that Democrats have a lot of people to choose from. Republicans got their turn the last go.
Yeah.
So the voters that I've talked to have also been incredibly overwhelmed, just even simply learning everybody's names.
Yeah.
And they're all different.
Right.
Well, that's the thing, too, is like, you know, all these other previous primaries have kind of been foregone conclusions in some ways. You can say how you want, but I mean, even going back like, you know, 10 years, it's been kind of like this. So now you have this broad swath of people coming through, and they're getting their chance to really kind of, like Gilda Cobb Hunter said, get up and see them and shake them out and see what's going on with them. So I think, you know, it's interesting because you hear some of the Republicans kind of making fun of how big the field is. And then,
of course, they had the same thing in 2016, which we all remember very well.
So it's just interesting to see. But you make a good point, Jimmy. Like, what's it going to be like when we see these debates coming on in the summer?
Yep.
Are people going to start getting tired of these stump speeches? And that's, I guess, when you start reducing your crowds, you start getting to your bases. We start seeing what the true crowd sizes are indicative of at that point.
You know, I mean, I will not dismiss, if you can draw 1,000 people as a candidate, that's reflective that there's at least a lot of interest in you. And I don't think everyone would draw 1,000 people if they showed up in Columbia. Kamala, I think, has made an early impression, put herself certainly in the top tier of that race. But I think it's going to be a long slog. You're going to become very familiar with these faces, with these names, and with these messages, and that's really the idea.
And Senator Warren had a big turnout in Greenville the other weekend when we were up there, Jamie.
Yeah.
It was interesting because it was a predominantly white crowd up there.
It was.
Though it is a very large black voting base up there. So she actually filled that question in the media gaggle afterwards. One of the reporters asked her, you know, this is a very white crowd, and you are trying to attract, you know, African-American voters because they are such a big part of the base. And she kind of answered it pretty well, I thought, just kind of handled it like, hey, I'm starting my campaign. I'm trying to get as many people as I can at this point.
Yeah, I mean, what she said is I'm going to go everywhere. You know, I'm going to go to every community in South Carolina. I'm going to get people to know who I am. And, you know, you have to go where they are. You can't assume that people are going to travel long distances to come to see you. You know, I think the reason why it was notable is just because West End Community Development Center is a predominantly African-American community center. So, you know, the fact that particular crowd was, you know, not entirely white, but relatively white, stood out to some folks. There were some officials in the Greenville County Democratic Party, Jalen Elrod, who was remarking about that. And Mayon used to report up in Greenville. So
that's an area that's been really affected by gentrification. And so to not see that many African-American potential voters there for a campaign may be a little bit concerning, because that is the demographic that you want to reach to in this race.
Yeah.
So if they're not there, that could be a potential problem down the road.
And that's something I was reading. There's a New York Times article talking this, switching to Bernie Sanders. The title of the article was Bernie Sanders Stumbled with Black Voters in 2016. Can he do better in 2020? And like we were saying, he was down here MLK Day at the Dome in Columbia at the State House, along with Senator Cory Booker. He did some swings, you know, in Florence and Charleston after that event. Jamie, from what you've been seeing, from what you've been talking about with people, I mean, is Senator Sanders kind of, now that he's announced and since then, has he really seemed like putting more effort into trying to fix what he maybe stumbled across in 2016?
It's been a concerted effort. He went to King Day at the Dome. The next day he went to Benedict College, a historically black college in Columbia, you know, really going right to what was viewed at least as his weakness in 2016. You know, this is a very different situation for him going into this year.
You were there. He also went to the Legislative Black Caucus.
He went to the Legislative Black Caucus. I mean, these are really deliberate choices. This is a very different landscape for him for 2016 in a whole lot of ways. For one, he's entering the race not as an kind of unknown, quirky senator. He's a big national name at this point with a massive national following. He raised like $7 million in a day when he announced his campaign. The other big difference from this time is it's not really one-on-one anymore. Yeah. And I think there was a large contingent of his supporters in 2016 who were folks who just did not like Hillary Clinton very much. And they're going to have a lot of other options this time. He has a very, very, very loyal base, very vocal. They're all up in our mentions every day. Yes. They, you know, this is a numbers game. At the end of the day, you can only vote once. It's about expanding that and being able to branch out. Because, of course, he did not do very well in South Carolina overall in 2016. And that is in part due to Hillary Clinton's popularity in South Carolina.
What I thought was interesting, too, you mentioned his stop at King Day at the Dome. Voters I talked to, because Cory Booker also spoke there, and a lot of voters that I talked to were more excited after Bernie Sanders' speech than they were after Cory Booker's speech, which I thought was really interesting. Yeah. I mean, Bernie Sanders did, I think, a really good job hitting some of those core progressive democratic issues.
And he called the president a racist. I mean, he really came full.
He did that too. Yeah. Correct. Yeah. So the voters, right. So the voters I talked to were almost more interested in what he could offer. But there was that poll that came out just the other day that had him, what, number two,
yeah,
number three?
Yeah, number two behind Biden. You know, I think that at this stage, it's all about name ID, and most of these candidates, folks have never heard of. You know, some of them they're just hearing about for the first time. And again, because of what happened in 2016, a lot of folks are familiar with Bernie Sanders. They're familiar with Joe Biden. Mm-hmm. And that gives them a leg up over everybody else at this very early stage. But by the time we get to February 29th of next year, it's going to be a different story. So he's going to have to maintain that, or not even just maintain it, but expand it in the year to come.
Yeah, with the poll we're talking about, there was a recent poll that came out from Change Research that polled 600 registered voters in South Carolina who plan to vote in the state's 2020 Democratic presidential primary. Joe Biden, who we've said has not declared or is just very interested in speculation about him, came in at 36%.
Should be said, James Smith, who is a longtime supporter of him, was the gubernatorial candidate here last year, has said that he believes it's not if but when Joe Biden gets
Biden
the race.
Watch. So. Biden. We're officially under a Biden watch. If we were on the Weather Channel, there'd be like, we'd be like, and when the water gets this high. So he said Biden was at 36% in that poll. Bernie Sanders came in at 14%. Kamala Harris was at 13%. Cory Booker 10. I mean, this is all very early stuff, so it's interesting to kind of see. But does this poll, Jamie, I mean, can we take much with this? Did we take it with a grain of salt? I mean, it's so early, and it's such a broad, that poll was so broad.
I think you take it with a shaker of salt. It is...
Shake it like a salt shaker.
Look, it does tell you some things. It tells you who has name ID. Yes. I don't think it surprises us, but everybody knows who Joe Biden is. He's been in politics for decades.
Yeah, he has strong connections to South Carolina.
Close former friend of Strom Thurmond. BuzzFeed wrote a good story about that this week. He would come in with much, much, much greater name recognition than anybody else. Mm-hmm. He is also a candidate who has spoken kind of against the sort of leftward lurch of the Democratic Party and has tried to keep it at a more kind of moderate level. Mm-hmm. And of course, as President Obama's vice president, he has some association there to a politician or former politician who remains extremely popular among the Democratic base in South Carolina. So he has that going for him, too. But, you know, what I was just going to say is these other candidates who did not pull as high at this point in the very, very early stages of the race, they have a lot of time to fix that.
Well, you know, they're South really Carolina just getting is, started. I mean, South Carolina is a small state. It gives them an advantage that they can crisscross the state in a day. I mean, I basically did it today. I was in Florence and I came here. I mean, it's not that hard to do. It's, you know, it's a cheap media market, so you can advertise pretty conveniently and cheaply. And, you know, once you start forming these networks, you can make that work. I mean, I was going to mention that Senator Kirsten Gillibrand was also in Columbia. She did a hit in Greenville, and she was also in North Charleston visiting churches. Meg Kinnard, who's not here with us, she was tagging along. She saw a lot of that, too. So, Mayan, is it just a matter of really doing the big cities, doing the small cities, and seeing where your audience is and maybe going from there?
I think it's doing all of it.
Yeah.
All of
absolutely.
It. I mean, we've talked about this before. In South Carolina, retail politics is incredibly important. and it's incredibly important to your success as a candidate. So I think hitting the big cities, I mean, clearly hitting the big cities, you're going to draw in folks that aren't just from South Carolina. I mean, that's the other thing. South Carolina is like 2 hours from every other state.
I talked to a snowbird. I'm like, okay, well, you know, right. A snowbird from Ohio.
There were people from Georgia at Kamala's event the other day.
I mean, I think what's going to be revealing and what we're going to see and what we're already starting to see, what the real choice these candidates have is they have finite time and they have Iowa, New Hampshire, mm-hmm. South Carolina, Nevada. You have Texas and California are early this year. So you have a choice of where to invest your money, but more valuably your time. And, you know, the candidates we've seen invest their time at these very early stages have been Kamala Harris, Cory Booker, Elizabeth Warren, Kirsten Gillibrand, and
I would say Bernie. I would throw
Bernie
in Bernie
as well.
Sanders.
Absolutely. And so, you know, there's quite a few candidates who have not been at all. Some of them came before the midterms, before they'd actually announced their campaigns to kind of help Democratic candidates at that stage. But it's really going to be a question of who thinks that they can win in South Carolina. And it's not the strategy for everyone. There are some folks who are much more electable to an Iowa caucus electorate, sure. And they should focus their time and energy there. And if they can do well there, then maybe that can provide them some momentum and push them forward. Mm-hmm. But there are some folks that are really built for a South Carolina primary, and I would expect them to give it a real shot here.
And just kind of to wrap up, I mean, are there any big issues that you're seeing either from, you know, trends in what questions people are asking or what you're hearing from people when you interview them in terms of what they want to see from these candidates at all, Maya?
They want to talk about healthcare.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely.
They want to talk also about education. Education has come up a lot at these stops that I've been at. Do voters vote on education is the other question. But education has really been at the forefront of some of these campaign stops, which is smart for the candidate because it ties into what the legislature is right now doing on the state level. There has been some comments on infrastructure, but I think healthcare and education have really been at the forefront.
Healthcare is always the money topic for Democratic candidates. It has been for the last several election cycles. It's always the ad message that drives the most voters. Polling and focus groups show that pretty consistently. You know, I mean, there are all kinds of issues. You know, economic inequality,
sure.
I would say, is the sort of big picture one. You know, and you see folks talking about specific policies like minimum wage. You may even start to see some discussion about, you know, sort of more out there ideas like universal basic income. There's some discussion, you know, from some Democratic candidates about things like that. There was a story in the New York Times today about reparations and Kamala Harris and Elizabeth Warren talking a little bit about reparations, which, you know, is something that has not been in the mainstream of politics. But, you know, obviously Ta-Nehisi Coates wrote that incredible Atlantic series several years ago, and now that's kind of becoming more into the forefront of Democratic politics today.
So much going on. We're just trying to kind of keep everyone updated with this. And like I said, you know, South Carolina ETV, we're going to all these different events as we can. And we're putting them on YouTube. Jamie is following them around, as is Mayan. So definitely read their stories in the Post and Courier and the state newspaper, as well as our other colleagues in the South Carolina press. We are keeping up with this so you can stay abreast about what's going on with the 2020 Democratic presidential primary next year. So stay tuned. It's a whole year worth, but that's what's important. So we want to keep you guys in tune with that. So thank you both for being with me.
Absolutely.
And thank you, Greenwood. In our final section, did you know, we focus on one quirky function of the state, politics, or government. It's named after the parliamentary procedure that lawmakers use when speaking to each other. Now, did you know that South Carolina Public Radio's Russ McKinney is back with some great state trivia? And in front of a Greenwood crowd?
I'm kind of nervous. This looks like a pretty knowledgeable crowd here. So, yeah. And first of all, since the editor of the local paper is here, Mr. Whiting, he is ineligible.
There we go. Good ground rule. I see a lab tap out there too, Adam Benson. I hope there's no safari open
Adam
there.
Adam Benson is just out here Googling. Look at this.
You got a real Paul Schaefer over there. All right, don't use your phones. And you couldn't even if you wanted to. These are so long.
Okay.
But let me just to give you a brief introduction. Russ is going to ask the question, and we'll poll the audience. You guys can raise your hands how you feel. Don't shout out the answer, even if you know. I mean, like me, I typically say, oh, I want to respond because I always know the answer, and
literally
I don't.
Never knows yeah. the answer.
So raise your hand the second time around.
So we'll get there. So everyone just take some deep breaths, and we'll just go on this magical trivia tour with Russ right now.
Okay.
Take us away.
Okay, thanks. Glad to be here in Greenwood. Looks like a few of you folks are affiliated in one way or another with Lander University.
So, here's the extra credit question.
So we've got a, since I was going to use the widest main street in the world, but anyway, we'll do this.
Japan.
Why?
Lander became a state university in 1972, 73, thereabouts. It was so small.
See how this works?
When it was created as a state university in 1972, 73. That the General Assembly made it share a governing board with another state college.
Mm.
It was so small, did not have its own board of trustees or governing board, so it had to share. Which state college or university did it share a governing board with? A, Clemson, B, Francis Marion, C, College of Charleston, D, USC Columbia.
All right, so let's go through this again. I saw a lot of confused faces out
Everybody
there.
Everybody ready? A, Upper. Clemson.
No
right
Clemson.
Right up the road. B, Francis Marion.
In Florence? All right.
C, College of Charleston. There's one back there.
Wow, Post and Courier.
D, USC.
I'm going to go with Amy. I'm going to go with Amy for B.
Okay.
A Lander alum.
Okay, well, B and C are correct.
Oh. Come on, Russ!
Trick question!
See how this works?
You
see how
now,
this works?
Francis Marion, College of Charleston, and Lander, all three shared a board of trustees when they all came into the state system about the same time in the early 1970s. It wasn't until 1988 that they kind of went out and had their own boards of trustees as they have now.
That's some great stuff, Russ. Thank you so much for that. The South Carolina Lead is one of many ways SCETV wants to help keep you informed. Check out the latest news and live streams on SCETV.org. Listen to coverage from South Carolina Public Radio and watch This Week in South Carolina, a show where I talk with the newsmakers of the week on SCETV. Fridays at 7:30 p.m. and Sundays at 11:30 a.m. All that, this podcast, and more is available on SCETV's super easy-to-use app and scpublicradio.org. Subscribe to us, and we'll have a new episode for you every Tuesday on Apple Podcasts. Search us easily on your Android, the NPR One app, or wherever you find podcasts. Follow us on Instagram at @scledepod. You can see photos from the studio, on assignment, and, of course, our dank memes. We're also on Twitter with the same handle, @SCLeadPod. We have swag, sticker swag that is. Send us a direct message on Twitter or Instagram with your address and we'll send one your way. Email questions, comments, or your gripes to scled@scetv.org. The South Carolina Lead is produced in partnership with South Carolina ETV, South Carolina Public Radio, and a special thanks to the Post and Courier and the State Newspaper. Our producer is A.T. Shire. Sean Birch is our supervising producer. Tom Posey is our executive producer. This episode was recorded and produced at T.W. Boone's in Greenwood, South Carolina on February 21st, 2019. I'm Gavin Jackson. Thanks for listening. Secret message. I'm just trying to get some ranch.